The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Howard, Boker Tov. I've learned during the course of our chats that if I want anything to be, I want to be sure that something gets said, I have to say it first. So happy birthday, first of all. Mazal Tov on your birthday. And Tu B'Av Sameach, because of course it is today the 15th of Av, which is the Jewish Day of Love. So I don't think it's coincidental, Howard, that your birthday is falling on this Day of Love. Let's hope that you get a lot of love today on your birthday.
Thank you. And even from our listeners, because there's not a lot of that going around.
Well, listen, I mean, I think the listeners can be exempt to some extent. Yeah. Okay, otherwise they wouldn't be who they are. So we'll give them a little bit of slack. But I hope that people will be taking Tu B'Av seriously today. I mean, you know, during lockdown, during this time that we've had, it's nice to have the equivalent of Valentine's
Absolutely.
Day, some people like to call it.
Tell us about that. Tell us about where Tu B'Av comes from.
Well, Tu B'Av, I mean, there are various reasons why we celebrate this day of love on the 15th of Av, and actually some of it comes from the Talmud. So this is something that goes back really, really a long time. But apparently that during the days of the temple, this was significant in terms of marking the beginning of the grape harvest, whereas Yom Kippur on the other end marked the end of the grape harvest. And it was traditional that the unmarried girls of Jerusalem would dress up in their white garments and would go out to dance in the vineyards. The Talmud apparently says that there were no holy days as happy for the Jews as Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur, interestingly enough, but certainly a lot of reasons why Tu B'Av is celebrated. And I think the most important thing for us is that we use the opportunity to show a little bit of love and to enjoy the day in an appropriate sort of way.
Amazing. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Of course, the big story that broke last night was this terrible, terrible story and terrible events that took place in Beirut. The numbers are horrific. They just keep climbing. What is the latest information that you have on this?
Well, first of all, there's some amazing footage which actually shows live the explosion and how it simply ripped through an entire neighborhood around the Beirut port area, destroying a massive building. There are conflicting reports of how many people have actually died. Dozens are being reported. It's certainly approaching 100. People are still stuck under rubble and stuff like that. Bodies, I don't know. It's just something really, really horrendous. And when we understand what caused this explosion, it's even more horrendous, because apparently this was caused by something like 2,500 tons of ammonium nitrate that had been stored in the port area of Beirut after it was confiscated from a ship that had docked in the port, considered to be dangerous inflammable material. So what do you do with it? You take it off the ship and you just keep it at the port, right? I mean, that's the most logical thing to do when it's too dangerous to be sent out on a ship going to sea. Then let's just keep it in the port area of Beirut. Well, I mean, unfortunately, the rest is the rest. But Israel has, interestingly, sent out via diplomatic channels offering help to the Lebanese authorities. And this has come quite unexpectedly from many accounts. But the Israelis did actually send out a notification through various diplomatic channels, because obviously there isn't direct communication between Israel and the Lebanese government. But the Israeli government, via the channels of the Minister of Defense and the Foreign Minister, have both offered assistance to the Lebanese officials, assistance as much as they would wish to accept, including sending emergency teams to assist with the humanitarian effort, and including offering medical facilities, and even agreeing to take victims into Israeli hospitals if the Lebanese authorities find that that would be helpful and that they would wish to accept this. And apparently there are also some United Nations workers who have been injured in this whole explosion. And obviously they have also been given the possibility of getting medical treatment in Israel. So Israel has really,
has there been any response to it, to the offer?
Well, not as yet, not as yet. And I think the Lebanese authorities are just shell-shocked at what's been going on there. I mean, there were reports of the governor of the Beirut area crying on national TV trying to report what had happened, which was just so shocking for them, so unexpected for them, given, of course, that they're having to deal with many other things as well. I mean, just a few days ago, Israel was having conflict over the Lebanese border with mostly Hezbollah forces, it has to be said, rather than Lebanese government forces. But Hezbollah and Lebanese government is fairly kind of mixed up and a little confused. So it's difficult to draw a distinction between the two in many aspects. But today, Israel is offering its humanitarian assistance. There hasn't been any response, but we do know that Israel is not the only country to have offered assistance. Apparently, offers of assistance have come through from the UK as well. Israel is reported to have been using the channels offered by the United Nations in Lebanon and France, and also through the UK. Apparently, Israel has tried to communicate with the Lebanese officials. President Rivlin has publicly expressed his condolences, saying that we share the pain of the Lebanese people and we sincerely reach out to offer our aid at this difficult time. I think that the aid is heartfelt. I think it's genuinely meant, even though we've had so many years of conflict and so many years of bad things happening between the two countries over the border, security events, people killed on both sides, a history which is really not something that we feel very positive about, so much conflict over the border. But as the Israeli government said, today is the day to put all of that aside and to reach out in our attempts to try to help as much as we can, because we do not wish the suffering on the Lebanese people, and to the extent that Israel can be of assistance to the Lebanese authorities to make their suffering a little bit less, then the Israeli government is certainly happy to lend whatever help can be lent.
Clive says, firstly, Mervyn says, my birthday's in 5 days. Mervyn, remind me in 5 days' time, and I will, of course, insult you then. I mean, that's obviously the time-honored fashion here on this show. Clive says, wasn't there a Hezbollah missile factory there? So as this story blue, so to speak, excuse that expression, there was a lot of rumor. The first thing was that you started to see people blaming Israel. Then there was this talk about a Hezbollah missile factory. There was a lot of rumor around this. What is and what isn't true?
As far as I'm aware, Howard, I think it really focuses on this shipment of ammonium nitrate that came off the ship already, not just over the past few days. This has apparently been stored there for quite some time already. This is not a new issue, and so theoretically could have easily been dealt with already some time ago. I don't think it has anything. There were some stories, rumors that I saw connecting to some sort of a fireworks factory that was in the area. This doesn't look like fireworks to me. This looks like something a lot more serious than firework. When you just see, and I've seen the video clip a few times of what it looks like when that blast just ripped through the neighborhood. This is something a lot more serious than fireworks. There hasn't been much credence given to the possibility of a Hezbollah some sort of weapons factory over there. As a general rule, the Hezbollah weapons production facilities are not within built-up areas. It would surprise me if it was right in the port area. I think that it would be relatively safe to assume that this has nothing to do with military hardware, that this is really to do with that shipment of ammonium nitrate.
Indeed, and of course our thoughts and prayers with everybody in Beirut and everyone who has family there, thinking of them. Eli Rosenberg has been granted government permission to buy El Al.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a story that we've spoken about before. Eli Rosenberg is the son of the New York based businessman Kenny Rosenberg. So it sounds and it feels like the money is not Eli's, but rather the money is his father's. Eli, of course, has the right to apply to take control of El Al as an Israeli citizen. So while his father Kenny is a US citizen and obviously, most likely the source of the funding, Eli himself has made Aliyah. He's an Israeli citizen and therefore qualifies, as far as government rules are concerned, to be a possible controlling shareholder in a company which has got certain national security interests, such as El Al. And apparently the government company's authority has moved very quickly indeed to actually grant him permission, which there were two things that really surprised me about the story. The first of which is the speed with which the government company's authority has moved in order to grant him the permission. I've seen situations where the government company's authority has taken months and months and months and months to weigh up something which is a much less substantial than this particular offer. People, you know, the law in Israel is that if you wish to be a shareholder holding 5% or more in a company that is considered to be of national security interest, then you are obliged to get permission from the government company's authority, which has to come with permission from the security authorities and from the defense ministry and from the prime minister's office and from the ministry of finance. It's a whole thing where you've got to get various permissions just to hold 5% of the company. And I've seen companies that have applied for that 5% permission, and I've seen it take months and months and months and months, which seems to be really not that substantial. Here, Eli Rosenberg is looking to try to bid for 44.9% of El Al. Apparently, he's bid $75 million, which doesn't place a whole lot of value on the company itself. But I guess we're kind of all wondering to ourselves what the future of the airline industry is in general and how this whole corona thing is going to affect airlines moving forward. It seems to me that damage has been done which cannot be rectified within a very, very short period of time. There's still thousands of aircraft that are lying, standing on the ground, not flying at all. El Al has almost its entire fleet grounded at the moment, obviously losing money every day. I'm not quite sure what the Rosenberg business model is about, how they think they're going to recoup their $75 million that they're planning to pay for 44.9% of El Al. But I just wondered to myself how we can try to predict what the future of airlines is in general. Obviously, El Al is just one factor, one of the bit part players in the whole story. But there is a massive story about what the airline industry might look like in another year or two or three, when I assume we hope to have a vaccine of some sort. Is that going to bring us back to what the airlines used to look like last year or the year before? It's not an easy answer to give at the moment.
And I don't believe that we even have the ability, we don't even have the tools to be able to work this out, because we just don't know what the world is going to look like.
Right. I mean, there are some people who think they've got it all down pat.
I feel quite insecure.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're the risk takers amongst us. But, I feel very unsure about what the airline industry is going to look like. I know there's been massive attempts to try and get airplanes flying again in Europe. There are people moving around. There are planes flying, certainly not in the same numbers as was previously the case. And as I've said before, I don't expect those numbers to come back to reality anytime soon.
Absolutely not. What is the situation in Israel with regard to the second wave at the moment?
So we're still waiting for the coronavirus committee, the government committee, to make up its mind as to what it wants to do. We're now told that the meeting of that committee will take place later today and that there will be some announcements coming out there. There are still contradictions in every possible sense coming from different parts of the government. The Ministry of Health, for example, is taking a very conservative approach and saying that any attempts to open up will be opposed by the Ministry of Health. Our coronavirus commissioner, Professor Ronnie Gamzu, seems to be quite intent upon opening things up, and I very much support his view, even though I think we all need to be cautious. I saw a statistic which said that something like 70% of Israelis are wearing masks, which I think is getting near to where it needs to be. It needs to be 100% because, that's the only way that we're going to be able to combat this virus at this current stage where we don't have any vaccine. And so we have to just wear masks and be much more careful. There has been a story which says that those ultra-Orthodox communities who wish to travel to Uman for the upcoming Rosh Hashanah New Year holiday, which is traditionally a place where many thousands of people gather for traditional reasons. Apparently there has been permission granted for quite a large number of people to travel to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. I have no idea how that's going to be policed. I think it's a potential disaster zone and could potentially cause a lot of people to fall ill. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. Just in general, there was an attempt to try to close down Israel over the weekends. That attempt really has failed, and it seems as if they're going to pull away from that now. So we're just waiting for the committee to make their statement later today as to what the next steps are going to be.
Yep, and certainly we'll keep an eye on that story. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place.